nearly 90%. That's how much of Kenya's electricity now comes from renewable sources. And they did it while doubling the number of people connected to the grid. Good morning. Welcome to Brightside Daily. I'm Rory, alongside Elizabeth.
And today we've got four stories that prove the future isn't just being imagined, it's being built, treated, and grown.
We're starting in East Africa, where Kenya is quietly leading the world's clean energy transition.
Plus, a drug that cuts seizures by 91% in children, an ancient plant that could transform how we feed the planet, and a nasal spray that might replace your flu jab, your COVID booster, and your pneumonia vaccine all at once.
Let's get into it. Nearly 90%. That's the share of Kenya's electricity that now comes from renewable sources: geothermal, hydro, solar, wind. While wealthy nations debate transition timelines and argue over subsidies, Kenya just went ahead and did it. And here's the part that makes this more than a nice statistic. In 2013, only 37% of Kenyans had electricity at all. Today, that number is 79%. They didn't just clean up their grid, they built one that reaches nearly twice as many people.
That's what gets me. They expanded access and went green at the same time. Most countries treat those as competing priorities.
Kenya flipped that logic on its head. Instead of building coal plants and promising to transition later, they invested directly in renewables from the start. The Alkaria Geothermal Complex in the Rift Valley now generates over 900 megawatts on its own. That makes Kenya the ninth largest geothermal producer on Earth. And for communities too remote for the main grid, solar mini-grids are filling the gap. Over 200,000 solar home systems deployed in rural areas. Families that would have waited decades for a power line are cooking, studying, and running small businesses on clean energy right now.
The emissions numbers are striking too. Kenya's grid produces 0.14 kilograms of CO2 per kilowatt hour. The global average is three times that.
Now, 21% of the population still lacks access. Grid reliability drops during dry seasons when hydro output falls. And industrial demand is growing fast. This isn't a finished story.
But the model is proven. Build clean from the start. Don't wait for wealth to arrive first.
So here's the question worth sitting with. If Kenya can reach nearly 90% renewables while connecting millions of new households, what's everyone else's excuse?
I want you to picture a family. Their child is having hundreds of seizures a day. Every medication the doctors have tried has either failed or made things worse. They've been told, essentially, that this is just their life now. That's the reality for roughly 1 in 3 children with epilepsy. Treatment resistant, no good options left. This week, a clinical trial reported results that stopped neurologists in their tracks. A new drug reduced seizures by up to 91% in children with rare treatment-resistant epilepsy.
91%. For kids who were having seizures every hour, that could mean going most of a day without one.
And what happens when seizures stop isn't just medical, it's developmental. Children who've been trapped in cycles of neurological crisis start reaching milestones their parents had given up hoping for. Speech, social interaction, the ability to play. The trial focused on rare epilepsy syndromes, the kind that typically begin before age 2. There are 470,000 children with epilepsy in the United States alone. A third of them have forms that don't respond to existing treatments.
What about long-term safety? These are developing brains we're talking about.
That's the right question, and it's why more data is needed. This targets specific rare syndromes, not all forms of childhood epilepsy. Cost and access will be real barriers. Rare disease treatments often carry premium pricing. But here's the number that stays with me. 91% for families who've been hearing there's nothing more we can try, that number changes everything.
All right, here's one that caught me off guard. The key to feeding 9.7 billion people by 2050 might have been hiding inside one of the oldest plant families on Earth, a humble little thing called a hornwort.
I have to be honest. I had to look up what a hornwort was.
You're not alone. They're tiny, ancient, and most people walk right past them. But researchers just find they contain a protein feature called RBCS-STAR that supercharges the way plants capture carbon dioxide from the air. And capturing CO2 is exactly how plants grow. More carbon in, more biomass out. The modeling suggests that if you transfer this feature into major food crops, you could see yield improvements of 20 to 30%. At the same time, those crops would be pulling more CO2 out of the atmosphere.
So you're solving food security and climate change with the same intervention. That's remarkably elegant.
It is, and the timing matters. The FAO says we need to increase food production by 60 to 70% by 2050. Traditional breeding is approaching its limits. 828 million people face acute food insecurity right now.
Where are the caveats?
Real ones. Transferring genes between plants this distantly related is hard. The protein might need supporting molecular machinery that crop plants don't have. And genetic modification faces regulatory hurdles and public resistance in many countries. Field results could look very different from lab results.
But if even half of that 30% improvement translates to real harvests, we're talking about feeding hundreds of millions more people from the same land. As one of the researchers put it, we've been looking at modern crops for answers. We should have been looking at their ancestors. Right, so here's something I didn't know was even being attempted. Scientists are developing a single nasal spray that protects against COVID-19, influenza, and pneumonia. One spray, three diseases, no needles. Those three respiratory diseases together cause over 4 million deaths globally every year. And right now, protecting yourself means separate vaccines, separate appointments, separate side effects. A lot of people just don't keep up.
The needle-free part is interesting on its own. But there's something more fundamental going on here, isn't there?
There is. When you get a jab in your arm, your body builds defenses in the bloodstream. But respiratory viruses don't enter through your blood. They enter through your nose and throat. A nasal vaccine builds what's called mucosal immunity, protection right where the infection actually starts. That means it could potentially stop you from getting infected in the first place, not just prevent severe disease. That's a meaningful difference for public health.
Vaccine hesitancy affects 20 to 30% of people in developed countries. How much of that is just needle phobia and appointment fatigue?
More than we probably admit. And that's part of why this matters. Make it simpler, make it painless, make it one visit instead of three, and more people actually do it. Now, this is still in development. Nasal vaccines are technically tricky. Regulatory pathways were designed for injections. Manufacturing needs different infrastructure, and it has to work for people with allergies or sinus conditions.
But the concept itself, one spray protecting against three of the world's biggest respiratory killers, that's the kind of thinking that changes how public health works. Not just a better vaccine, but a better system. Time for our rapid fire round. Here are the numbers that matter this week.
16.6%. That's the average weight loss achieved by the first oral GLP, one pill just approved by the FDA. No more weekly injections, just a daily tablet. For the 42 million Americans with obesity considering treatment, the barrier just got a lot lower.
6.7 million. That's how many Americans live with Alzheimer's. This week, scientists announced they've reprogrammed ordinary brain cells to seek out and destroy the disease's signature plaques, turning the brain into its own pharmacy. Still early stage, but the approach is entirely new.
186,600. That's the number of American manufacturing jobs that offshore wind could support through domestic steel demand alone. $42 billion in steel orders over 20 years. Green energy, bringing back blue-collar jobs.
2 terawatts. That's the estimated global potential of blue energy. Power generated where rivers meet the sea. Scientists just developed slippery nanopores that could finally make it practical. Clean, constant, weather-independent power. Everywhere there's a coastline.
And finally, koalas. After devastating bushfires and population crashes, genomic research shows their DNA is bouncing back, genetic diversity recovering faster than anyone predicted. An animal that survived everything Australia could throw at it, still fighting.
That's your Brightside Daily for Saturday.
If any of those stories made you feel a bit more hopeful about the world, share this episode with someone who could use some good news today.
And for the full stories, with all the links and sources, head to thebrightside.news. Everything we cover is there in detail.
Monday's looking packed already. We'll have something worth coming back for.
Until then, enjoy the weekend. The world's in better shape than you think.
It really is. See you Monday.